The following program is brought to you by We Are Many. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out wearemany.org.
So if anyone needs to get resituated, definitely do so. So welcome all. It's really exciting to have a packed room for a talk about branch building that warms my heart. So to start, this talk is called How to Build an ISO Branch. And I really wish we had time to delve into absolutely every aspect of that process, from starting a new branch from the ground up to strengthening and expanding even the largest branches in the country. Unfortunately, our time is quite limited today, so we'll be focusing primarily on what it looks like to strengthen and build up a branch or twig once you already have a few committed members. But I do want to say that for folks who want to learn more about what it looks like to start a brand new branch, I really recommend talks titled Starting an International Socialist Organization Branch on wearemany.org. There are a couple really good ones, in particular one from a comrade named Owen from Portland. These are a really fantastic resource. Everything on We Are Many is a great resource. I also want to recommend the range of talks at this year's conference that focus on the ISO's own history and politics. Also those that take up debates in socialist strategy and all sorts of ideas surrounding our collective fight for a better world. There's really such a wealth of organizational experience here to take advantage of. So Dana, Alex, and I are from different branches around the country that are in different stages of development. And our hope for today is to share some of the many lessons we've learned in building our own branches, as well as some of the ABCs that we should all be thinking about no matter where we're from. In our talk, we want to stress two really important things. First and foremost, we want to highlight the centrality of routine and organizational discipline in creating effective branches. This focus on routine isn't arbitrary, professionalism for professionalism's sake. It's important because the skills and logic of branch building routines translate directly into building the infrastructures of resistance, the actual methodology and tools of revolution in intense periods of political resistance. Firm routines and political understanding within a branch really generate a layer of activists to whom other organizers can turn in struggle. Without structure and democratic involvement in a branch, we can't exude both that active capability and political gravitas that we need in order to encourage working class organization and play a role in struggle ourselves. The second thing that we want to emphasize are the three primary processes of branch building, which we identify as recruitment, integration, and development of members. These processes are deeply interrelated and should always be happening simultaneously, but branches will often choose to focus more specifically on one of the three points, depending on the circumstances that they encounter. Before I dive into this question of recruitment, though, I think it's really important to sort of zoom out and talk about the political moment we're in, because when we're talking about branch building, we're not talking about practices that happen in a vacuum. We're talking about actions that are very much oriented on the political situations we encounter. So to start, as the ISO, we're a small-ish political organization in a very dynamic political period. One with a revolutionary and party-building approach, which not only builds resistance to present oppression and exploitation, but also articulates a vision of complete social and economic change to end the multifaceted violence of capitalist society. We want to develop a layer of cadre socialists who can operate within the working class and within a future revolutionary party, to argue for democratic organizing, for socialism from below, and sort of use that methodology as a way to actually address the disastrous impacts of capitalism. We're also a socialist organization in the Trump era. In other words, everyone is under attack, and most people understand the need to resist Trumpism on one level or another. Bernie Sanders' campaign opened the door for conversations about socialist politics, and we can absolutely celebrate our comrades in the Democratic Socialists of America just recently reaching a membership of 40,000 members, while at the same time voicing a critique of electoralism within the Democratic Party in a very comradely way. As more and more people are radicalizing around Trump's attacks, we understand that our audience for Marxism is by and large to our political right, the growing masses of people who are turning out to marches or picket lines and wondering how a better world can be won. Importantly, we see the return of mass protest and striking as a strategy for resistance that more and more people trust as a means of making change. After 40 years of labor defeats, this year's Red State Teachers Revolt and the struggle of nurses in California, Massachusetts, and Vermont are showing us that listening to politicians, administrators, and often union leadership is not the most effective way to win, but rather it's rank-and-file organizing that lifts all workers up. In mass actions in the streets, from the Black Lives Matter movement to the airport protests against the Muslim ban, and recent actions to prevent family separation and abolish ICE, we see the potential for protests to not only win reforms, but also be a site of radicalization and the growth of activist organizations. In this context, we have an enormous opportunity to not only normalize radical calls like the abolition of ICE, but also expand the ISO's periphery and increase our membership. Now, don't get me wrong, not everything that we've seen in the last 2 years is inspiring. Most of it is horrific. But building stronger ISO branches must be at the center of our response to those horrors, because we see that, if anything, this is a long-term fight. So that's sort of to set the stage now to get back into the question of recruitment. While I dig into more specifics, I do also want to address what we often refer to as the campus perspective within the ISO. In a nutshell, the ISO has had a perspective of focusing growth and recruitment on college campuses for many years. We do this not because we believe that students and those with degrees are more capable than anyone who has not attended higher ed institutions, but rather we operate based on an understanding that students are current and future workers who will participate in the workforce in all sorts of different capacities, industrial or otherwise. We recognize that the social environment of the college campus lends itself to encouraging young people to engage in politics, in study groups, and be interested in long-term organizing. Today's college students are tomorrow's strike leaders, protest organizers, speakers, and revolutionaries. To give an example of this, back in Vermont, where my branch is located, I've spent the last several weeks watching socialist and ISO member Tristan Ady organize among rank-and-file nurses to prepare for the first strike in the history of her union. That's enormous. And it's among nurses who are some of the lowest compensated in the country. Even though Vermont's a blue state, this is remarkably reflective of the moment we're in with teachers' revolts in traditionally like Republican areas. I've seen her qualitatively change the sense of class struggle for almost 1,800 nurses who are going to walk that picket line next week. And she joined the ISO 20 odd years ago while the organization was operating under the campus perspective. At the same time, my comrades who work in other industries, who aren't nurses, who don't work in any medical fields, and several of whom who are currently students, play a foundational role in the Community Solidarity Alliance that is preparing our city to stand with strikers. So we can really see in this sort of microcosm of Burlington that the classroom and the workplace are irrevocably intertwined. Many of you in this room will have been around branches that either currently operate on a campus or are trying to build a student presence on one. Again, I'm from Burlington, Vermont, where we have, over the past 3 years, recruited enough students to be a definitively campus branch. So the big question that my portion of the talk should answer is, how did we do that? To start, we focused on constructing those infrastructures of resistance, branch routines, that with enormous seriousness, and I'll go through what that looks like with regard to recruitment. So the most important time of the year for recruitment on campus branches is in the first few days of the fall semester. It's that exciting time when freshmen arrive and upperclassmen return, and everyone looks for new organizations to get involved in. For most campuses, there's an activities fair of some sort to introduce student clubs. At UVM, we call it Activities Fest. If there's anything we've learned from our experience at UVM in recruiting, it's not to underestimate this event. In our most successful tabling there, we turned out our full membership. We brought out our table with its international socialist organization cloth, plenty of Haymarket books, massive stack of socialist worker copies for members to sell, flyers for our upcoming public meetings, sign-up sheets for our listserv, and a great big banner from a recent protest that read "Solidarity Trumps Hate" right behind our table with all of the socialists. We coordinated our shirts. Most of us wore the like "No Human Being Is Illegal" sign that I see some folks in the audience wearing. And we were sure to assign most folks to be out in front of the table handing out flyers and selling the paper, while making sure to keep three or so people behind the table to talk about the books, sign-up sheets, or anything else. An important factor in this strategy for larger branches to consider is that by turning out our full membership, we not only brought a great deal of excitement to the tabling, but we also had enough members that several can devote time to long conversations with potential contacts without sacrificing outreach to a lot of passersby. So the next big thing after this tabling is the first public meeting, which should be based on the national lead as communicated in our ISO notes, or weekly communication between our national organizers and our local branches. This lead is based on the moment we're in and the kinds of questions we're anticipating. For instance, when I first joined during a little bit of a slump in social activism, it was simple. It was titled Socialism 101. This past year, coming right out of the Boston anti-fascist demonstration, everything that happened in Charlottesville, the theme, I believe, was build the left, fight the right. Branches should choose a speaker who is invigorating and exciting, someone who can handle the nuances of the political lead and inspire contacts to get involved. This should be a collective project, both in the sense that several people can help craft a talk that really nails the key points, but also in the sense that the broader group membership of the branch should consider the discussion period as important as the lead itself. Done right, this meeting will be a really great entry into ISO politics, especially for young people on campus. This meeting should also be at the same time and place as all future branch meetings. The predictability establishes a sort of weekly cycle that new folks can jump right into. And in my opinion, this sort of sense of a weekly cycle can help strengthen routines in the branch as a whole. So coming out of that first big meeting, there should be a very clear next step for what new people can get involved in. A collective socialist worker discussion can be really great for this. Generally, this is at the time of the year where the new September issue is coming out. Members and contacts alike will have new things to discuss in the new edition of the paper. And so there are a few really great things about this. I think one of them is that re-engaging with SW within your branch can be great member development for everyone who's already involved and sort of reinforce the sense of like getting our lead and contributing to Socialist Worker, but it also can create a sort of less formal space than branch meetings where new folks and longer term members can sort of integrate socially a little bit more. What my branch has done in the past for these meetings is to select a few key articles and center a 1 hour long discussion on each of those. Again, this should be a space where contacts can ask many, many questions and also feel welcome to bring their own experience into the context of the article. And again, the time and location for this meeting should be chosen wisely. It should be one that contacts and a handful of members can attend on a weekly basis, that they can plan their schedules around to leave that 1 hour block open rather than just hoping that everyone will be free at one time on a given week. Again, this sense of a weekly cycle is helpful because the next week, that block of time can be used to discuss sections of where we stand or a statement of the ISO's politics. Then after that, it can be a group meeting on the members' toolkit and the ISO code of conduct. Then on the meaning of Marxism, which is this lovely volume right here that everyone should definitely pick up a copy of if you haven't read it already. And then after that, you can even use this time to transition into focusing on, say, the new members' education series. And still, you know, cycling SW discussions in whenever a new issue comes out. I would really recommend bringing dues checkoff forms to all of these hour-long meetings, to all branch meetings and one-on-one contact meetings. I think it's important to try and keep a balance of working with people who want to join the organization quickly, while also taking seriously the political questions of those who will be won to the project more slowly. After each of these meetings, the contacts coordinator should be sure that someone is following up individually with the most serious new people and have a sense of what their questions are or whether they are ready to join. A well-organized contacts coordinator can really be a key to branch growth. In my branch this year, we had a recent graduate coordinating, and we centered a great deal of our contact work within the branch committee itself, talking through best practices and figuring out next steps together. We made a couple of mistakes, I'm sure, but that centralized conversation really allowed us to prioritize the most politically serious in our periphery and chart a course to winning them for winning them to the ISO. So keeping the sense of the weekly cycle, the next step, again, is tabling, which is vital for meeting contacts and building meetings long after the activities fair has ended. Also, for branches that do not yet have club status at a university, this is almost doubly important. Tabling should be at a regular time and location in a well-traveled part of the city or university. It should involve a recognizable table with literature, with meeting flyers, and project a clear lead through signs and conversation that establishes the branch's focus for a given week. There should always be a pre-meeting for participants to discuss the lead, and perhaps an SW article pertaining to it. Contact should always be encouraged to attend. This is a great opportunity for them to begin building the ISO in their own right. Tablings are political interventions in the environment that we organize in. They're a place for folks to come with questions about socialism. They're the place to learn about the next rally or march. They're really central to our project, as Dana will discuss further. In my experience, it's actually quite important to win contacts away from considering tabling as a chore pretty early in the game. Instead, I definitely recommend inviting contacts to brainstorm around making tablings or branch projection more effective so that they feel a sense of ownership over the work that they're involved in. As contacts become members and the branch has to be consolidated and integrated, new members can easily add fraction meetings to their weekly plans as well, again, considering the sort of cycle of like branch meeting to branch meeting. There are a few last things to say about recruitment before I wrap up. Firstly, we're in a period in which the term socialist is becoming normalized, and the intensity of the Trump administration's attacks are driving people to protest in record numbers. Again, just this past weekend, I stood and listened to my comrade Owen address a crowd during the March Against Family Separation and call for us all to fight for a socialist future explicitly and unapologetically. And in an event that was actually emceed by a Democratic politician, the crowd of more than 1,000 people cheered him on with all the yelling and applause and energy that we would find at a plenary here. It was really incredible. And with our tabling and advertising our meetings regularly and projecting our organization in movements in these types of moments that we're in, it's really natural that we will often have more contacts than our membership has the capacity to work with. That was certainly the case in Burlington last fall, and we had to figure out how to prioritize the most serious among our periphery without glossing over others' questions or interests. That's a hard balance, and mistakes can be made there. Every week, we went through who our top five contacts to focus on were, and we charted a week-by-week course to win them to the ISO's project. This was carried out both in one-on-one check-ins and in those group contact meetings that I mentioned before. Around, you know, where we stand, the members toolkit, et cetera. And I also will say something that was helpful for us was continuing those sort of buddy meetings after folks had joined to continue addressing their questions once they had a red card in hand. Again, with regard to who we recruit, something I really learned the hard way was that throwing all of one's energy into recruiting activists is not generally the best way to grow. Our growth in Burlington came with a conscious shift away from working solely with activists who had pre-existing responsibilities and commitments and toward recruiting new members on the basis of clear and unapologetic Marxist politics. This has been said many times in the ISO, it's better to recruit Marxists than activists, but when I was a new member, it really took like a full academic year of throwing all of my energy into being some sort of like authentic activist to realize that branch building couldn't happen that way. Alex will touch on this further in a few minutes, but this confusion for new members around how to find contacts is natural, and it can manifest in a lot of different ways. Another trend that I've seen is the desire to recruit based on existing friendships than based on politics. Being one to effective branch building is a process. It isn't necessarily intuitive, and we also have to be careful about riding the balance between letting new members make a few mistakes along the way so that they can learn from them, rather than just projecting a very firm way of doing something right. In addition to all this, we also have to win new members to disciplined organizing as they are joining. Chris Harmon wrote on the Revolutionary Party, quote, "It will be an organization that combines with a constant attempt to involve in its work ever wider circles of workers, a limitation on its membership to those willing to seriously and scientifically appraise their own activity and that of the party generally. The party is not to be made up of just anybody who wishes to identify himself as belonging to it, but only those willing to accept the discipline of its organizations. In normal times, the number of these will only be a relatively small percentage of the working class, but in periods of upsurge, they will grow immeasurably. In a party-building organization that operates frequently on college campuses, this perspective can be a little bit of a challenge to hold to sometimes, but it's really essential if we want to build an organized resistance to capitalism. Finally, I want to say that the trajectory of branch growth is not just a straight line heading up and up and up. Branch memberships fluctuate, the objective circumstances around us change and can change very quickly. And we are all impacted by the social and economic violence of life under capitalism. That all has an impact in how we show up to organize. We should expect people to have to step back from time to time, and we should be ready for unexpected people to step up. Whatever happens, even when mistakes are made, we must be ready to honestly assess our strategies and find a way to move forward to build our branches. With these assessments, we can remember that experimentalism is awesome, especially considering the different geographies our branches exist in, but keeping track of the ABCs of ISO organizing is vital. So the perspective I've laid out today might not fit exactly into your local branch, but by emphasizing routine, those interrelated processes of branch development, adaptability to political conditions, and constant assessment of practices, we can really build those infrastructures of resistance and we can actually fight for a better world.
Thanks. For my portion of the discussion today, I'm going to focus primarily on the ideas of integration and centralization. In the ISO, we use integration to discuss all of the post-recruitment work that's involved in keeping our members around, involving them in the day-to-day work of our branches, and ideally convincing them to be lifelong revolutionaries. I think it's sometimes used as a shorthand for any post-recruitment training and education. In our branch, for example, we have an integration fraction, which is the group of folks responsible for organizing our two reading groups and making sure that we continue to work with and follow up with new folks even after they sign a red card. But a more concise way to understand integration is that it's the work we do to bring members in line with the politics and the project of the ISO, not like in a frightening way, but like we're marching together in the same line way, unity in action. That's what it means to integrate someone. An integrated member is someone who's actively helping to carry out the decisions of their organization and their branch, who understands, agrees with, and is a student of the politics and the history of our tradition. Why do we need to do this? I know Alex is planning to talk about the importance of finding the right balance between movement work and integration, so I won't belabor the point, but the level of success and growth that an individual branch is able to achieve depends on how well members are integrated into that branch. A branch might have 30 on-paper members, but if only half the membership is actively participating in the week-to-week activities of the branch, selling the paper, building meetings, going to study groups, etc., the branch is only having half the impact. Even more troublesome, if a huge layer of the branch isn't integrated, what are they doing? Sometimes members who aren't one to the project of the ISO or who don't understand the perspective are involved in other kinds of organizing and pushing for something different, which I think makes sense. Like we recruit people to the ISO who want to change the world. They're going to go about doing the work of trying to change the world in some way or another, regardless if you know it's always the work that the branch has agreed to do. I don't think it's a malicious thing. I think it's a very natural thing for activists to be pulled to. But worse than having a zero impact, I think this can actually have a disorganizing effect if the push for something different isn't brought to the surface and carried out through democratic channels. So we need to be integrated. Integration allows a branch to function as a harmonious whole, engaged in a shared project, rather than as a loose collective of activists that hang out together. It makes us more effective and impactful in our communities. And a well-integrated branch that is also connected to and actively carrying out our organizational perspective is a part of a project being carried out on a national scale. Integrating our members at a branch level is actually crucial to the success of the entire organization and the growth of the entire organization, if your branch is also well-integrated and centralized. In the next 10 minutes, I'm going to give you some brief background on why we organize this way as an integrated body, and then I'm going to talk about how to make sure that your branch is in sync with the larger organization, and how to integrate your individual members into that project. Lenin's What is to be Done was published in early 1902, a summary of the policies and practices of the Iskra newspaper. Of particular interest to this talk, Lenin uses What is to be Done to outline his vision for an all-Russian newspaper that he believed would give form to an all-Russia revolutionary party. Not only would the newspaper connect the struggles of workers all over the country, but it would link up formerly isolated groups of socialist organizers. Russian socialists would be connected through the content of the paper itself, united behind the voice of a single publication, and organized around the tasks of producing, transporting, and selling this newspaper. This vision of a party that was unified across geographic boundaries, that acted in sync because of their shared project, this paper, contrasted with the prominent methods of organizing of that time, methods that Lenin tears apart in What is to be Done. As opposed to having an all-Russia party that was operating as a whole, socialists throughout Russia were organized in loose study circles that involved socialist intelligentsia and workers who were brought into the circles to learn. Here is how Lenin described them. A student circle establishes contacts with workers and sets to work without any connection with the old members of the movement, without any connection with study circles in other districts, or even in other parts of the same city, without any organization of the various divisions of revolutionary work, without any systematic plan of activity covering any length of time. What Lenin had in mind was very different. Instead of a bunch of disconnected study circles, he wanted a tightly organized all-Russia party that was united in its project and connected through constant communication. That was his conception of the revolutionary party. While the ISO does not conceive of itself as being the revolutionary party, we are a cadre-building organization, and we are training revolutionary socialists who could be a part of building a vanguard party. And our organization is modeled after Lenin's conception of an effective socialist organization, which is to say that we're not a collection of disparate study circles all over the country, but a national organization with a shared political program and a shared project with a newspaper at the center. In other words, branches are not independent entities that do whatever sounds good in their particular community. There's not one branch over here that only organizes clinic defense work and one branch over here that just does reading groups. We operate under democratic centralism. I keep scrolling through way too fast. It's a runaway train. Which means that our democratically elected leadership sets the course for our organization after lots of discussion and debate and hopefully plenty of information from our various branches. The branches are responsible for carrying out the perspective set forward by our leadership. On a local level, branches synthesize that perspective with their own intimate knowledge of the conditions that they're organizing in, and they figure out how best to carry out that perspective. Regular report backs on how the work is going, how the branch navigated challenges, whether or not the instructions from the center were helpful. They help other branches make adjustment, and they provide our leadership with the kind of real-time information that allows them to make adjustments as well. I just want to walk through some of the benefits of the centralization and the reason to focus on centralizing your branch if that's not currently what's going on. Because of our placement all over the country and our constant communication through the ISO notes and our newspaper, Socialist Worker, our organization is able to detect developments and changing trends in the world around us much more quickly than if we were in isolated groups. There's a greater division of labor. The huge amount of work that goes into analyzing a particular political moment, producing a newspaper, creating propaganda, putting on a conference, etc., is not replicated in each branch, but shared out among all of us. We don't all need to write an article about the most recent Supreme Court ruling. One person can do that, and the rest of us can then read it and think about it and start generalizing the lessons in our location. This is clearly far more efficient than if every branch had to write every article they ever needed, or if every branch had to design their own abolish ICE posters, or if every branch had to put on their own conference and provide all of the speakers for that conference. Especially if you're in a new branch or in a branch that's currently rebuilding, centralizing can save you time. It's actually a much more efficient way to operate if you don't have to recreate the wheel over and over again when all of us are doing the same work. We don't just share the labor of our organization, we share the talent, experience, and voices of our organization across geographic boundaries. Through the paper and at the conference, comrades from Boston can teach and influence comrades from Madison. A contact who's been holding off on joining the organization can be won after attending the conference or a day school and seeing more of the organization and hearing from more comrades than just their local branch. Though we're a small organization, we can carefully synchronize our efforts across the country. And when we do so, we play an outsized role in the political landscape. And I just want to share one great example of this. In 2017, bigots announced pickets at Planned Parenthood clinics all across the country. ISO branches were instructed to organize counter-protests at our local clinics. Our newspaper, Socialist Worker, published multiple articles in the lead-up to these counter-protests, explaining the history of successful clinic defense work and arguing the importance of defending our clinics. So all of us across the country were armed with the arguments and the history that we needed to be a part of the debates that were going on when Planned Parenthood rejected the counter-protests. Additionally, it laid out the debate in black and white for all of our contacts and the people that we wanted to organize with. It did some of that work for us so that we could share the article and make the arguments and generalize the arguments wherever we were at. And we need it because Planned Parenthood really fought the clinic defenses all over the country. And comrades were engaged in debates everywhere about why ignoring the bigots is actually a terrible and losing strategy. The results of the counter-protests themselves were mixed in large part because of Planned Parenthood's resistance to people organizing in defense of our own right to abortion care. But because of our coordinated efforts on this issue, the debate around clinic defense work has been elevated into the mainstream of reproductive rights discourse in a way that it wasn't before. A new generation of reproductive rights activists now understands that this is a key question for the movement, and we want a lot of them to our side. Folks might remember that Cosmopolitan magazine even published an article chastising the International Socialist Organization for our position. It really happened. And I don't think that getting name dropped in Cosmo is like our goal, but it's definitely our goal to influence movements and debates, and this is one area where our organization, our tiny organization, continues to have noticeable influence. If our work wasn't centralized, if only a few branches had organized these clinic defenses, it's very unlikely that our influence would have had the same reach. Centralization is not optional, but an expectation for branches. Democratic centralism only works if everyone does the job they're supposed to do. When we don't, it clouds our analysis after the fact. For example, in the ISO, like Scarlett laid out, we currently have a campus perspective. But if a particular struggling branch doesn't have regular paper sales for 3 years, it's hard to determine what portion of their lack of growth can be attributed to that perspective versus that branch's failure to carry out the perspective. That said, I think we have to be realistic about the fact that branches do drift as conditions and membership in different locations changes, especially in the Trump era with its wild fluctuations and attacks and struggle. I think it's very easy to become disoriented. In Madison, we only recently recentralized after like a few years adrift, and the project was made much harder by the fact that we were trying to do it during the first year of the Trump presidency. I'm gonna spend the rest of my time sort of discussing some practical steps for getting centralized and integrating members into that project. First, I can't overstate the importance of centering socialist worker and bringing it into your branch routines, not just for centralizing your branch, but for training and integrating your members. Members should be reading Socialist Worker every day. This is the first step to developing any kind of analysis about what's going on in the world and how our branches should be talking about politics with the people we meet. A branch that regularly reads and discusses Socialist Worker is less likely to veer into ultra-leftism. And a branch that leans heavily on Socialist Worker is less likely to be confused about where our emphasis should be at any given time, because the emphasis is communicated to us through the paper. Again, before there were plans to organize counter-protests at Planned Parenthood in 2017, there was an article in Socialist Worker about the history of our organization countering Operation Rescue. Like it's foreshadowing, right? This is the important thing. Socialist Worker, again, is not just a propagandist, it's an agitator and an organizer, and we can take leads from the paper itself. Have regular paper sales. It's important for projecting our politics and growing, but it's also important for training our current members. Have a paper sale and have pre and post meetings before and after every sale. Choose an article to read and discuss together at the pre-meeting, something related to whatever you plan to lead with on your sale. Ask a comrade to prepare an introduction for the pre-meeting and give yourselves 30 minutes to talk about the article, how you plan to approach people during the sale, what your slogans are going to be. Afterwards, get together for another 15 to 30 minutes and talk about how the sale went. This isn't just a moment for tallying up papers sold either. This is not just like how many papers did we sell, pack up, go home. This is an opportunity for our members to actually practice assessing the mood around us. What were their conversations like? Who bought a paper and what seems to win them over to buying a paper? What were they interested in talking about? This kind of information is important when we're trying to organize in these communities. Like, what are people on the ground actually saying and thinking there? Several weeks ago, the Madison branch had kind of a lackluster paper sale, to be honest, with very little foot traffic, and we only sold a couple of papers. But at the same time, in just an hour of standing in the middle of campus, we raised $30 for a local immigrant sanctuary project. And we had like a number of positive interactions with people around what's going on at the border, the idea of keeping families together. So even though we didn't sell very many papers, this was like clearly something that was on people's minds. They wanted to stop and talk about it. So it was at our paper sale post meeting that a comrade started agitating for a speak out around immigrant rights the following week. A speak out that attracted 800 people and became a march from our campus to the state capitol, and we raised over $1,000. So this time is very important. Like, you're actually using the information that you collected and kind of assess at the post meeting to make determinations about next steps. In addition to making heavy use of Socialist Worker, branches should look to the notes for guidance, especially if they're feeling disoriented. The ISO notes are sent out to branches every week, and they make it very clear how branches should be spending their time. Do what the notes say. Have the meetings that the notes suggest that you have. Usually they suggest more than one. You can gauge what meeting is the best one to have based on what you learned from people at your recent paper sale. And it should be clear to all members that reading the notes isn't just a job for the branch committee, but for every member of the organization. All of us should be thinking about what the notes mean for our branch and how we're going to implement the instructions that we're being given by our national leadership. And if you don't have time to do what's in the notes or have meetings about the stuff that's getting covered in Socialist Worker, I think it's very likely that you should be writing up articles and internal reports explaining what's going on near you, because probably it's something we should all hear about. It's probably politically significant. And that brings me to the other half of the whole marching in unison piece of integration, which is sharing information and having democratic debates and discussion to inform our organizational perspective. I think the branches could share more. I think that people should write more internal bulletins about what's going on in their branches. It shouldn't just be like a once a year thing where we all hear a report from Portland or wherever. I would like to hear more from all of our branches. What's going on, what they think of the new meeting structure, how the latest issue of Socialist Worker did on paper sales. I see opinions about some of this stuff on Facebook, but I think it needs to be written up and sent in so that everyone in the organization can think about them and add their own thoughts and arguments. Socialist Worker is another venue for information sharing and debate, and this is another part of the reason why it's so important for members to read and discuss Socialist Worker. Organizational democracy is happening at socialistworker.org. In the past week alone, there have been 3 or 4 articles about electoralism and how revolutionary socialist organizations should relate. This is a big, important discussion for our organization, and we need people to be thinking it over, discussing it with their comrades, and writing up their own opinions, and this should be happening, obviously, at a branch level, too. Discussion, debate, and information sharing is important, as I said, at a branch level as well, and there's a big part of it's a big part of integrating individual members. You have to make time in branch meetings for this, and it needs to be clear to members of the branch how they should be sharing their opinions and ideas about what the branch should be doing, what the fall perspective is, whether or not the branch should be involved in a particular movement. Members need to know that they can call or email members of the branch committee in between meetings, that they can propose changes to an agenda to reflect what they'd like to talk about, that they can propose topics for upcoming meetings, etc. Every member is responsible for the direction and the successes of their branch, and so every member needs to be thinking about what's working, what isn't, and what we should be doing differently. Of course, if members disagree, this needs to come out at the right moments and in the right ways, so that in the time for discussion and debate and assessment, in Socialist Worker articles and internal bulletins, in conversations with the branch committee, etc. Again, we want to be operating in unity, so by the time a branch has agreed to a plan for the fall semester, folks need to be getting good with that plan. And helping to execute it and not coming up with plans that run counter to what we've decided as a branch. Disagreement and debate shouldn't be obstructive or taxing to your branch. It should be healthy and enriching. Finally, discussion and debate and assessment shouldn't be limited to branch meetings, but can take place in informal spaces as well before a more formal assessment or a vote. At the bar after the meeting, at lunch after the paper sale, on the phone. Send people out to flyer in pairs so they can talk about politics or what's going on in your branch. Ask new members especially how they think things went and stress that their perspective is important to the overall success of the branch. Ask them to prepare to say what it is they think from the floor at the branch meeting so that the entire branch can hear what they think. I think that if comrades have more time leading up to a particular branch meeting to think through what they want to say and talk about it with other comrades, the discussion at the branch meeting can only be richer for it. There's a ton about integration that I did not talk about here, like pairing new members with cadre to do work as often as possible. I think some of the stuff's a little more obvious, so I left it out. Setting people up to succeed when they're doing something new. But getting centralized so that you're integrating people into the right project is a key first step for strong branches. It was a key first step for our growth in Madison recently, and that's why there's so much in there about that.
Hey everyone, so I'm Alex from the Greensboro, North Carolina branch. So Marx and Engels famously wrote, our theory is not a dogma, but a guide to action. As revolutionaries, one of our primary tasks is to inform our action by theory and develop our theories according to action. On a micro level, this is the regular work we do in our branches. And I'm going to focus primarily on 2 elements of this praxis. Membership integration, which Dana covered far more extensively than I will here, and movement work. So in the Greensboro branch, striking the balance between membership integration and movement work has been a major focus for our branch over the past year and a half or so. And we've gone through a series of different approaches with varying success. For the next little while, I'm gonna go over some of these different approaches, assess their effectiveness, and share some ideas as to what's worked well and what hasn't been effective for building our branch. I hope to illustrate through this talk why doing movement and integration work simultaneously is crucial for building cadre, while also recognizing that doing both at full throttle is a recipe for burnout, disillusionment, and frustration. Branches should set a goal of doing both simultaneously through a sensible division of labor across the branch, a balance that can be hard to strike, but is crucial for building strong branches. Getting there can be hard, but hopefully by sharing some of our experience in Greensboro and generalizing some lessons from these experiences, in addition to Scarlett and Dana's talks, by the time we come around to this meeting next year, the ISO will have grown by a factor of 10. Of course. So the first lesson I want to talk about is just to be flexible and adapt your branch life to the demands of the day. I think there are some common patterns we can make when our branches feel really small and like isolated from movements around us. In Greensboro, after our branch reformed after like a multi-year hiatus, we had a tendency to overemphasize the political education piece of our work in order to differentiate ourselves from surrounding NGO-linked groups, the Democrats, and some ultra-left tendencies in our city. This impulse to define ourselves in specific and historically rooted terms, I think is a really good one, as it's often really difficult to explain to the audience that Scarlett was talking about earlier, how the ISO differs as an organization from other organizations without a more nuanced understanding of Marxist politics. There's a flip side to this, however, in that the majority of people we meet have been radicalized through some direct political experience, and they really want to take action. These are people we want to be connecting with, and in our experience, many can get put off if their first encounter at a meeting is a dry reading group. For example, in Greensboro, four comrades or so mobilized like 15 people to come up to this conference a few years back, and not long after the conference started a meeting of Marxism study group that took up a large portion of our regular branch meetings. We very rapidly saw a decline in our meeting attendees as this reading group progressed. Although we secured a handful of new members by the end of the study group, our branch activity was by and large not reflecting the movements and conditions around us. Despite being involved in movements, we failed to make explicit how we were both developing an understanding of the movements around us while developing an independent intervention based on a Marxist analysis of contemporary conditions. In other words, it was not clear to our periphery what our task was and why, for example, reading something like Meaning of Marxism could be relevant to active engagement in social movements. The lessons that we generalize from this is that while it may be clear to longer-standing members while building an organization of Marxists who approach social movements from a particular point of view, it's not immediately clear to much of our periphery. Why we are doing what we are doing must be repeated over and over again and adapted to the particular conditions that we're facing. What we do is ultimately influenced by conditions around us, and explaining that in simple terms is a must if we expect to attract more people to our project. So following Trump's election, we're backing up here, we quickly shifted gears to orient outwardly as the level of struggle began to rise around us. And a whole new layer of people in the streets were open to more radical ideas. While very hard work, we developed a routine of identifying mobilizations around us. At this point, we only had a handful of members, sometimes initiating mobilizations and then orienting our branch meetings as follow-ups to the mobilizations. So upon Trump's election, we held a meeting on the two-party system and why we need an alternative, which was really well attended and produced a new layer of contacts who ultimately became members. This period was extremely fast-paced, and we saw our branch meetings grow by a huge factor. This was the time when we saw the unfurling of Trump's nightmarish cabinet, the Inauguration Day protests, the Women's March, the Muslim ban, the women's strike. So pretty much every week we would base our meetings around articles or talks around these current events and discussing potential and past mobilizations. In this 6 month stretch or so, we'd gone largely from one extreme to another. At first, maybe focusing too inwardly, later maybe focusing too outwardly. This pendulum-like experience had a number of practical lessons that influenced a series of decisions we made to centralize our branch activity more and ensure the qualitative growth of our membership was as much a priority as our engagement in social movements and our quantitative growth. At a time when we needed a significant layer of cadre, we only had a handful. So it became clear to longer standing members that we needed to place a special emphasis on developing this new layer of leadership developing in our branch. What we learned from this period is that it's important to continually generate sober assessments of our branch's capabilities and base our activity around what we can do most effectively. The crisis and volatility brought on by the Trump administration moved us in Greensboro to a much more outward-facing orientation as conditions seemed to demand action. At the same time, these shocks also demanded developing a more concrete political perspective beyond we just need to protest in order to inform how we protest, assess the flashpoints around us as they arose, and how to make independent contributions to the movements that we engaged. Sherry Wolf often talks about how, as socialists, we need to walk and chew gum at the same time. Sometimes we wish it would be so simple, but it takes time and constant assessment to balance these mutually reinforcing aspects of branch life, movement work, and membership integration. So how exactly we've attempted to do so in Greensboro will dominate the rest of my section. So the second lesson that I want to draw out is that building a strong branch demands more than just a weekly meeting. It's crucial to move more of your branch life outside of just your regular branch meetings to ensure you're meeting your top priorities. In something like a year and a half, we saw our branch in Greensboro quintuple in size. And we came to realize we simply needed more time together to make sure our newer members were developing into leaders in their own right, as opposed to defaulting responsibilities solely onto our limited number of cadre. To create more time to do so, we began holding bi-weekly membership meetings. While we continued to do our regular open branch meetings every week, we started focusing on going through the first year reading list from the membership toolkit. I think at this point, I probably read the membership toolkit about 40 times, and I keep getting new good ideas out of it. And collectively reviewing the ISO notes every other week with our whole membership in a separate hour-long meeting. The ultimate thrust behind this new meeting structure was to ensure our new members were developing their grasp of Marxism and were regularly exposed to the national reach and debates of the organization. By moving this task outside of our weekly branch meetings, we could remain outward facing by creating, like making sure our open branch meetings still had an easy bar of entry for new contacts. So early on in this process, we also set out to build our new members' confidence by making sure that they had regular opportunities to take on branch leadership roles, especially in branch meetings. As opposed to just reading articles every week, we began regularly discussing topics with members and contacts that they wanted to dive into more deeply, ranging from things like capitalism and climate change to the Republican tax bill, the Me Too movement, and Palestine. Based on these discussions, comrades would propose a set of five or so talks to pursue over the next series of meetings, and then delegate who would give each talk. While serving an important purpose in new member integration by giving members concrete tasks in the branch, doing weekly talks and discussion also greatly reduced the amount of time that we needed to prepare for branch meetings. We knew how the first half of each meeting would look more or less for up to a month, as opposed to constantly having to debate what article or subject matter to focus on. Of course, these topics were always subject to change if new priorities arose. For comrades who did not yet feel confident enough to give a talk at a branch meeting, we made sure they had regular opportunities to either chair or lead a section of a meeting agenda. Sometimes there can be a tendency to rely too heavily on your branch's best chair or most adept speaker or best activist. While there are cases where it's important to defer to experienced members of the branch, most of your branch meetings are great opportunities for new members to take on an active role. As activists, we generally learn best through experience, and it's important to remember that members are consistently engaging in ways that may initially be uncomfortable, but in the long run will build their confidence and militancy. So switching gears to discuss our movement work, in the first year of the Trump presidency, I think at one point we had like four or five different movement fractions that ended up spreading us way too thin across way too many movements. The question of how we engage with movements as socialists is a really complicated one, and one that goes well beyond the scope of this talk. But nonetheless, it's a critical question for building strong branches, as we don't simply want a membership that can recite the Grund Reset. We want a membership well-versed in Marxism that combines theory and practice. Applying theory to practice demands constant debate and assessment if we expect the socialist movement to grow beyond our branch meetings and into a bottom-up challenge for power. To better facilitate this on a micro scale in Greensboro, we decided to consolidate all of our movement work into one fraction, which holds weekly conference calls to discuss opportunities, assess previous actions, and develop proposals for the branch at large to consider. By collectively assessing movements, comrades have better prioritized branch energy about what's around what's actually moving. The small influence that we can currently make in movements needs to be concentrated for it to have any effect, and demands constant attention in order for us to adapt to the ever-changing terrain of struggle. This leads me to a final lesson, which is the importance of building strong and focused fractions to carry out the day-to-day work of building a branch. So this final lesson, fractions are crucial to making sure there's a sensible division of labor to meet your branch's needs. Fractions should be mutually reinforcing, but individually accountable to the priorities of the branch. So the logic behind our movement fraction was to consolidate our movement work so that we could better allocate resources to the movements going on around us. We also developed two other fractions, a projection fraction and a membership development fraction. I have to give credit where credit is due. We based these fractions on the Madison branch, so hats off to Dana and the Madison comrades for this idea. Our projection fraction is focused primarily on outward-facing work we do as a branch, so things like paper sales, public meetings, contact work, social media. Recently, this fraction has basically just been focusing on organizing for this conference, but it's been a really crucial way to help facilitate more discussion and involvement in our work to project our branch to our city. Perhaps most importantly, it's like a platform for discussing how to connect with our periphery, reassessing how we do paper sales, what kind of meetings we should do, things of that nature. Our membership development fraction focuses its efforts around our reading groups, our membership meetings that I was talking about earlier, and our buddy system. So since its inception, the membership development fraction has developed a series of summer cadre development day schools, has led trainings on how to give what is the ISO elevator pitch, and reformulated a buddy system where members are matched with one to three other members to meet regularly and discuss political questions, get updates if they missed a meeting, and create an explicit space for newer members to have time with longer standing members. The responsibilities of each fraction continue to develop and be refined, but this has been like the most sensible way for our branch to approach organization. Instead of building fractions around disparate movements and relying on individual members with leadership roles to execute a variety of tasks, we built our fractions to collectivize the major priorities of the branch, projecting socialist politics far and wide, developing our membership, and making interventions into social movements. This division of labor has enabled our branch to be much more nimble. For example, in the 2 weeks before the conference, we were able to host a well-attended cadre development day school focusing on what is the real Marxist tradition, host two fundraisers for the conference, have a paper sale each week, and build a socialist contingent for the June 30th actions around immigration. And no one cried. The division of labor meant that people organizing the Cadre Development Day School could simply focus, attend the fundraisers and join the socialist contingent on the 30th. The comrades organizing the fundraisers and paper sales needed only to complete the readings ahead of our day school and amplify the socialist contingent to the march. And comrades organizing the contingent needed only to prepare for the day school and invite friends to the fundraisers. Each week has a different priority, and that priority was the responsibility of a different fraction in our branch. So hopefully comrades are able to draw out some lessons from our experience in Greensboro, and I'm really looking forward to discussion to hopefully bring some fresh ideas from y'all back to our branch. So just to recap some of the major lessons, first, it's necessary to bend the stick hard in one direction in order to sort of hit the reset button and revamp your branch. This won't necessarily resolve all issues, but has the potential to vastly improve branch life if done so in an organized and democratic manner. Second is that there will never, ever be enough time in one branch meeting to do justice to everything that you're trying to accomplish. Do more outside of branch meetings. And third, develop a sensible division of labor based on what your branch's priorities are. Helps to reduce burnout, collectivize the labor that is that's generally taken to pursue these priorities, and provides a more immediate environment for developing members around the concrete tasks in the branch. So with that, we do have a couple of discussion questions, but we'll open that up once we finish up. Thank you.
The preceding program was a production of WeAreMany.org, a website dedicated to publishing radical and activist media that promotes a better understanding of today's world while also putting forward a vision for a better future. We Are Many is a project of the Center for Economic Research and Social Change. To learn more about this program or to find others like it, check out WeAreMany.org.